welcome to the Making a Living in Manga panel. This year's edition is Fan to Crow. We have a group of people who have turned their love of anime and manga into real paying jobs, actual careers. And we're here to... interrogate them and ask them their secrets of their success.
Okay, I'm out of there.
And hopefully you will get some really good tips from them too. I will introduce them in, well, I guess whatever order this PowerPoint deck is given me. First of all, that's you. Shori, please, sorry, if you would like to introduce yourself.
Well, I'm Victoria Robado. I'm a colorist on Gen on the Holograms, I also do covers. I also make my own manga-inspired comics, self-published. I work on different comics at the same time, and I also letter manga. I'm the letterer at the moment of Monster Musume, Thief Frag, and Top Beast.
Ooh, very good. Monster Musume. Yeah. All right. Next is Mark DeVera. Mark, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Mark DeVera, publishing sales manager of Viz Media. I'm probably the least creative person on this panel.
I wouldn't say that, Mark. I've seen your hairdos.
Sorry. So my job, in a nutshell, is to get print manga onto store shelves. That was pretty much all I did for Viz for about 4 years. I do a bit more with digital manga nowadays, but you know, everything I do has to do with getting manga that we make at Viz Media to fans such as yourselves.
Right,
thanks for coming.
All right, next. Our next guest is Marlene. Please introduce yourself.
My name is Marlene, and I'm an editor at Viz Media, and I also work on a lot of Shonen Jump titles, to name a few. I work on Haikyuu, Seraph of the End, Dragon Ball Super, and a handful of others. This includes both the print GNs as well as the weekly chapters that go up in Shonen Jump magazine digitally.
Awesome. All right. Next, we're Misaki. Please introduce yourself.
Hey. Thank you for putting that slide together. I didn't prepare anything like all you guys. I'm Misaki. I'm from Kodansha. I actually don't usually tell anybody what I do, actually. But my title says marketing director, but that means I do everything at the show at San Diego. I also work a lot with mangaka directly to get some interviews and exclusive contents with them. Nice to meet you.
Thank you. Eric Cole.
Hi, I'm Eric. I work at Udon. I work for Udon, and
is Udon.
I am Udon. that also means that everything at Udon I have to do, from managing artists to managing licensing to filling out all the accounting information and royalty reports. So you can ask me anything about Udon, I can answer you.
I have to point out that Eric's nerd cred went up like 500 points when he got this picture with Leiji Matsumoto, creator of Galaxy 999, several years ago.
Yeah.
Right? Nerd points. Woo!
Really?
Now, Lillian, please introduce yourself.
I'm Lillian Diaz-Prisbel. I worked for Tokyopop for about 6.5 years, and then Tokyopop went out of business, and I've been freelance since then. And I am the head of comics for Sparkler Monthly, which is an online magazine devoted to comics, audio dramas, and illustrated light novels aimed at a female audience.
Excellent. There's a Kickstarter going on right now for Sparkler Year 4, so please throw money at it so we can get more great comics from them. And now, Christopher.
Hey.
Thank you. I'm Christopher. I'm surprised to have a slide because I didn't send my stuff in on time. Thank you, Deb. I'm the director of the Toronto Comic Arts Festival, which is an annual event in Toronto, Canada. And we have a lot of cartoonists coming every year. We had over 600 actual cartoonists exhibiting this year from 21 countries, I think, including a number of Japanese mangaka. But why I'm here today is because we started TCAF with the idea that all kinds of different comics were really were equally valid expressions of the medium. So we've always had people that are doing, we've always put manga and international comics, bande dessinée and manhwa, and sort of every, as well as, you know, indie comics and North American comics on exactly the same level. And I'm glad to be here today to talk about why we did that and how we can keep finding support for cartoonists who aren't working in maybe a traditional mold in North America.
Excellent. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
Last but not least, Mari Morimoto.
Hi, my name is Mari, and I'm a freelance manga translator. I also interpret at events such as San Diego Comic-Con, although I've recently branched out to more than just anime and manga. And little known fact is, in my free/spare time, I'm also a veterinarian.
Oh, cool.
Most people know me best right now for Naoto. I'm hoping to talk about other titles. I've worked for Marlene. Everyone thinks I've worked for Lily, even though I haven't. And I actually am working for Eric right now, so lots of...
She gets around.
Incest.
She's that good that everybody has to hire her.
That's true. Lesson number one of making a living in manga. Make friends with everybody. And once you're in, you're in.
It is a small industry.
That's why you don't screw over anybody.
All right.
Hey guys.
Now we have the speed round questions. Tell us about your first exposure to manga or anime. Would you like to start, Eric?
I'm an old guy. So my first exposure is actually things like Mazinga, Getorobo, and then later on become Gatchaman and stuff like that. But I was cut short on my enjoyment because my mom, who is a teacher in Hong Kong, she was the one like, these things are not good for you. And at that time, TV sets are made in cabinets and you can lock them. I'm talking about black and white TV sets, so you get out of that. So pretty much, I don't get to see much afterwards, and that contributes my crazy addictiveness of finding my childhood when I grow up. So now I'm going back, watching everything, collecting everything, buying everything.
Publishing everything.
Yeah, I tried to publish everything.
Little note, also you're publishing some, did you already publish Rosa for Sight?
That's what we're working on right now.
Beautiful, that's excellent. All right, Misaki, please.
So I was at some point I was like a normal kid growing up in Japan, and look at me now. I used to take train to go to work go to school every day, actually. And then every Monday morning, I used to buy Shonen Jump magazine. Every Tuesday, I bought Rurouni Kenshin graphic novels. And it's just like I used to just keep on buying like books as it comes out. So I was already like a manga head by the time I was like elementary school. That's it. I have to like get down dirty and then like get some money some other ways, but kind of I'm not gonna go into that too much.
So I was a Japanese kid that grew up in New York, and back then in the summers they would run subtitled anime on TV, and my first exposure actually was Galaxy Express 3-9. And so that kind of dates, those of you who know manga or anime will kind of guess our ages by what titles we mention. But, and then manga, like I would get hand-me-downs from cousins they would ship clothes and use clothes and use manga from Japan every once in a while. And I used to secret them away because my mom was an educator also. And I've had manga ripped up. Manga that would probably cost a lot of money now because they're classic. That got ripped up because she caught me reading them when I was supposed to be doing homework.
For me, it was illegally traded tapes of Akira, like multiple generation copies of Akira.
Scratchy.
Yeah, super scratchy and with the like Ninja Turtle voices. And it was that was the first time I was really conscious of the otherness. Like this is something special. This is something different. This is anime, not animation. Or Japanime, as it was called at the time. And And it wasn't until I was older that I went back and was like, oh no, all the shit that you've always liked, like Transformers and Robotech and Voltron and Fables of the Green Forest and all the stuff that used to air on TVO that was like French and Japanese co-productions, that was all anime as well. So it's weird. I always think of it as being Akira, but I've always liked anime and manga and just didn't know it.
Well, I was born and raised in Argentina. And surprisingly, my older siblings that were 10 and 12 years old and older than me, they already were watching manga, anime. They were watching Robotech, and Super Campeones, which is Captain Tsubasa. I was already exposed to it, but my first experience was Sailor Moon unedited. Like, we have the direct Latin American translated, but the direct chapters. And manga, it only began until 2003, perhaps, or maybe 2000. Cardcaptor Sakura, that a local print, publisher had started publishing, which was because of the way Argentina works, with all of our economic problems, you wouldn't have found manga before then, which is when they were able to start producing it.
Kind of going off of what Mari said with guessing our ages. So my first was in, I'm going to say, around third grade with Inuyasha on Adult Swim at a sleepover, and everyone thought it was like super scary, and I thought it was really cool. For manga, it was a fifth grade class with one of the early volumes of, I thought it was Fushigi Yugi, but I think it's now Oh My Goddess, which is something that a fifth grader probably should not have been reading. But yeah, so I think I'm like much younger than the other people. But yeah, so a lot of the time, a lot of people were like, ah, that's lame. Because I grew up in a very, like, tight-knit community where if you liked something that was a little off, like, it was kind of looked down upon. But, I don't know, I would wake up at, like, 2 in the morning to secretly watch Adult Swim without my dad knowing, going to the guest room and stuff like that. So I didn't really know what anime was till much later, but I'd always kind of liked it, thinking something about this was really cool.
It actually kind of feels like the secrecy is like the key to getting into manga and anime, period.
Keep it secret from the dad. When you're 20, you can tell people.
Yeah, don't take that. If parents do not approve us, then we get into this job.
I think nowadays I think it's more, like, it's different. Acceptable. I think for, like, kids born after the year 2000.
How about you, Mark?
All right, so for me, I got into anime and manga the same way a lot of people my age. I'm around mid to late 20s, got into it. I was a big Pokemon kid. From there, I was a big Final Fantasy kid. And then shortly after, Toonami started playing a ton of anime. So I got into, you know, Dragon Ball the way all kids my age got into Dragon Ball. But what I feel made me go further than that was finding Animerica magazine. Being like, oh my god, wow, so there's more than just these three things. There's Pokemon, there's Sailor Moon, and there's Dragon Ball, and that's it, right? And all the anime, and then this magazine showed me, no, you're wrong, child. There's so much more than that. So that was one thing that expanded my knowledge and passion for anime and manga. But in addition to that, there were visits to the Philippines where anime and manga was much more robust of an industry at that time. So that's how I got further into it. So I had, and then, you know, shortly after I got into high school, when I got into high school, that's when the manga boom really exploded. That's when Shonen Jump magazine came out, and I was a big fan of both of those. So combine all those together, I became a fiend. And then when I got disposable income, I became even more of a fiend. And here I am today.
Lily?
I'm kind of similar to Chris in that I was a comics and animation fan all my life. So, like, in hindsight, Last Unicorn was probably my first exposure to something that was really, had like a heavy Japanese influence in terms of the animation style. In kind of a more obvious way, the first big thing was Sailor Moon. So, well, I was in high school and that started showing up on Cartoon Network, which is too old to be watching Sailor Moon.
Was it when she was still called
Selena?
Like,
this is everything that I've wanted my entire life. And then I started reading, that was also when Tokyopop started putting out the first Sailor Moon graphic novels, and so I would go to my Barnes & Noble or go to Newbery Comics and spend my babysitting money on picking those up. And I was like, you know what? This is pretty cool, but I think I could make this better. Cut to 7 years later, Tokyopop hires me to be an editor. So, and hopefully I did make things better in my little way.
All right, I'm going to skip ahead a little bit. How did you get your first job in the manga anime business? Anyone want to jump in first? No,
let's go in reverse order. I can start since I...
Okay, please.
It segues nicely from me being like Tokyopop hired.
Please.
So I went to college at a really nice liberal arts school in Western Massachusetts, and I went expecting to be an astrophysics major. I was a comics and animation fan still, so I like pretty quickly joined our little anime club. And then also very quickly decided that I was not cut out to be a mathematician and switched to double majoring in English and Japanese. I had wanted to go to a school where I could take another language. I always liked languages. And just on a whim, I was like, well, I've been to Sailor Moon and stuff and Gundam Wing at that point. I'm going to try Japanese and see what I think of it. Turned out to be a great department. It was really small. I got a lot of attention and stuck with that. So then... 4 years later, so I studied abroad in Japan as well, and met Stu Levy, who was the head of Tokyopop, is the head of Tokyopop, who was doing a presentation at my college talking about his sort of vision for the future of the manga industry in the United States. And I was really interested in what he had to say. I thought that was cool. He talked a lot about internships, but Tokyopop only did unpaid internships for college credit, and I lived on the East Coast, Tokyopop was in Los Angeles, there was no way I could go and spend a summer doing a free internship on the other side of the country. So that was kind of out. Cut to my senior year in college, I'm trying to figure out what to do with a Japanese and English double major. I was kind of thinking publishing, and so I was looking around at jobs, and lo and behold, Tokyopop had an opening for a junior editor. And it turned out that that was actually the first time that they were hiring a junior editor, specifically because they wanted someone who they could kind of train up in the ways of making manga. So they hired me specifically as part of their original development team, but I did a lot of licensed stuff as well. So spring break senior year, I flew out to LA, did a job interview. They hired me a couple weeks later, and a week after graduation, I packed up my childhood bedroom and shipped it up to Los Angeles. And I've been there ever since.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, it was kind of one of those things where it's like I applied to the job on a whim, turned out to be in the right place at the right time. I had a little bit of publishing background, which helped kind of, I think, get me in the door. And then it turned out that I was a good fit for the company, and I really like Los Angeles, and so I just stayed.
Do you think knowing Japanese is a prerequisite to working in the anime manga biz?
Absolutely not. It certainly helps. I think having a resume that had both of those skill sets, and I had done an internship in New York at that point, at Tor Books, actually, having a little bit of knowledge of publishing, whether it's through something like that or through like a journalism background, even just any sort of thing on your resume that demonstrates that you have a certain sense of responsibility and a little bit of background copy editing or something, that can be really enough to kind of raise you off the pile.
Show of hands, though, how many of you here can speak or read Japanese?
Kind of nice because like you can actually read the contents before it gets translated, so you know what's going on in it to make a decision on like whether if you want to do the acquisition or not. But other than that, it's just a good bonus that you can read more manga.
I think it depends on your job title, whether you need to know Japanese and how well you need to know. Obviously, as a translator, if you don't know Japanese, you really should be a translator.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm at the point where I consider myself conversational. I translate one book for one company. And so I would get sent on licensing trips to Japan occasionally, but I could never be in a meeting by myself. I would always be there with a fully fluent licensing person because I just don't have enough polite language, I don't have enough business terminology to be able to sit there and like negotiate a deal or something. I would get rolled out as like, here's one of the editors. She can talk about the creative side and like what the fans are into. And I could be charming and amusing and start giving me alcohol. My Japanese improves a little bit.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah. I would totally like take a little bit like right before I needed to like actually spend periods of time. But yeah, no, I'd say my Japanese level is around yours, and I would mostly use it for, like, I'm not a translator, so I would use it to either backtrack on rewriting, because sometimes a translator will over rewrite.
Or under rewrite.
Or the other way is I can't understand what they were trying to say from the translation I got, and I would just read.
Misaki, did you want to say something?
Oh, no, I forgot.
Marlene, I know, Marlene, you did an internship at Tezuka Productions, yes?
Yeah, no, so my background, I actually don't have an English background. My degree is in film and, like, film theory and screenwriting. And I actually had two internships within this industry and a third in Hollywood. But I interned at A&N and I interned at Tezuka Productions. In Japan. So, what should I say about it? It was a really amazing experience, and I think that having that on my resume really gave me more options within this industry.
Mark, how did you get started at Vizpa? Or what was your first manga job?
Oh, so I'm at my first manga job. Or I guess, all right, well, three positions later, but still Viz Media. And the way I got here was... started from wanting it in college. That's when I was, you know, buying manga constantly. I was at Kinokuniya in San Francisco at least once a week, buying a lot with my student loan. Great use of the student loan money, by the way. And I actually really wanted to work at Viz. Like, I was going on the job site every week, every day for a period of time. And then, you know, I kind of forgot about wanting to do that until this center called New People opened up in San Francisco, and there were all these articles making it seem like that was connected to Viz Media. So I'm like, oh, I'm at Viz Media right now. And oh my god, there's Seiji Horibuchi right over there, who's the founder of Viz Media. At the time, he had nothing to do with Viz Media, but I didn't know that. And I kept talking to him, like, oh my god, I love Viz Media. Can you sign my copy of My the Psychic Girl? Like, I really did that. That's a true story. Talk about fan pros. Oh my god, how much more fanboy can you get? And from interactions like that, I got an internship at New People, which once again had nothing to do with Viz Media, but Viz Media people would come and go in there to eat at the restaurant and whatnot. And through a connection, somebody I met there, like, hey, we have this job at Viz Media, want to apply for it? And I'm like, yeah. And then I did, and here I am. Wow. That's how I got it.
Persistent. Misaki, how did you get into the manga biz?
It's kind of hard where to start counting. But I used to do a lot of random jobs, and then one of them was like painting houses, and the other one was like working at Kinokuniya bookstore, and you know, I was kind of like always living in the back room reading like Central Phrase or something and put it back. And then, you know, my mom was like, well, if you're just, like, not doing anything productive in America, you should just come back to Japan and get a job here. I was like, wait, no, I don't want to do that. So, like, I'll just try, like, one more place that will appeal to me, which was Viz Media, which Mark was just highly speaking of. And I just realized this company cranks out, like, a lot of manga that I was really into at that time in English. So I started to see, okay, what is this lettering? What is sound effect? What is this translation? So I started to really dig deep into that stock room and start reading manga. And when, yeah, like, right before I was going back to Japan, I was like a pig on a, you know, but that's about to be a bacon, you know? And then I was like, okay, I'm going to try one more place. Apply for Viz Media, like, I got a very entry job there, and then from there, the rest is history.
Very nice. So Eric, I'm kind of curious how you got started in this business, because it sounds like your mom was not into this manga thing at all.
Well, it's funny because, you know, as I said, my mom was a teacher, so she's very keen on a lot of things, as a lot of the Chinese moms are, which is like, when we moved to Toronto from Hong Kong, she was like, I don't care what you're studying, you know, you just need to get a degree. So I ended up going to interior design because I love design, I love drawings, I love doing all those kind of things. And the interior design is the only thing out there that seems to be viable, rather than doing fine arts that you end up being like a poor, you know, starving artist that was like, okay, let's do interior design, is something that's good. But the jobs are few at that time, it was a recession and everything. I was doing freelance jobs for people doing renderings and you know, drawing floor plans and stuff. While in the meantime, I actually have a lot of time left, so I started building model kits, and they have these Star Trek Next Generation model kits made by a company called Geometric in the States. And I found out that there's nobody distributing it in Toronto or in Canada. So I ended up going up to the Paramount licensing agent, and I was like, can I actually get the rights to distribute these? So that's how I started a totally different career, being like a business person, you know, trying to do something. And out of fandom too, you know, I'm a big Next Generation fan at that time. And then with that, I was going to import the Kyoto Star Wars vinyl kits in. But then Kyoto was like, no, you know, we don't sell outside of Japan, we don't have the rights. So I went to Lucasfilm at that time, it was 1995.
How old were you then?
Yeah.
Just
27.
27, that's
ballsy, man. So I went up to Lucasfilm licensing agent and I was like, hey, you know, like, I want to do this Star Wars stuff, bring it from Japan. And then they tried to contact them, and Kyoto was like, no, we're not interested in international business. So the guy was telling me, he's like, can you make your own? And because of the Next Generation model kits people, and for your information, the interesting thing is, those vinyl kits, even they are made by Geometric, is actually manufactured at that time by Max Factory in Japan. So I have known Max for like over a gazillion years, because I deal with him directly at that time and learned from him how to make vinyl kits and stuff. So I was like, yeah, I can do my own. So I started getting licensed to make my own Star Wars vinyl kits too. And then from that, you know, I started doing more licenses, and you know, I helped Jim Lee make the Gen 13 action figure. I did a lot of other stuff. We did the Hellboys, Garage Kid. We do a lot of those things. And so I started knowing all these comic book people, and I started knowing all these comic book artists. Then they started asking me to help them out on a lot of different business. And eventually with the right timing, you know, like we decided to form a studio together. And at that time, I'm still doing toy and product development. And while I'm still, you know, starting Udon, and but later Udon got so busy, so I stopped doing, you know, product development and just continued doing Udon. We went from being like a publisher, being an artist, creative service house, to becoming a publisher when we signed the Street Fighter license.
Oh my God, story is crazy.
Yeah, it's like one thing after another. So with the Street Fighter license, we do the comic first, and we started doing the mangas. We started doing the art books and everything. So now, with the Street Fighter manga and art books, you know, happening, the springboard's good on to get other art book and manga license, and that's where we are. And it goes into full circle because today, now in San Diego, we announced that we started Udon Collectibles, which is the product, you know, merchandising branch of Udon. So I got to go back to do some merchandise too.
Show the pins. Yeah,
the pins. So we have these limited edition Street Fighter pins as exclusive to San Diego. So this is like
go
the first.
Go get them, man.
Yeah.
Gotta get them all. That's Victoria. I want to ask you how you went from fan to pro.
Well, I studied graphic design in college, and this is in Argentina, so it's a little bit different than how it goes on here. You have a very specific plan, and you follow that plan. I can't just be like, oh, I'm just changing my major. That doesn't really work down there. And I had been studying Japanese for a couple of years now because I was just interested in languages. And I like languages in general. When I started, I've always wanted to draw comics. Like, I believe that I learned to read with Duck comics, Donald Duck, Scrooge McDuck, and stuff like that. In Argentina, it's really cool because you're just walking down the street and there are just little shops, little kiosks full of magazines and comics, and you just buy them off the rack right there and there. I had decided to study graphic design because I thought that that's all I was able to do. Now, this is like 2004, just 3 years after a huge economical debacle in Argentina that really burn us to the ground. So it was a little bit of uncertainty. Like, my family was like, are you going to find any kind of work on that? And I was like, I don't know, I just want to do it. And the internet became a thing down there. And when I started seeing that other people posted comics online, I thought that I could do that. So I just started posting my comics, and I met up with other people that post their comics, and those other people are like, I know this other person that does this thing. And when they told me, hey, do you want to earn some dollars? I said, I'm straight, I want to earn some dollars. Argentinian one is just like, eh. So that's how I met Adam Arnold, and the editor for Seven Seas, and I've been doing that since 2013, probably. I can't remember right now. And he's been just giving me books regularly. And I already had the back of being a graphic designer, so I already knew how to use Photoshop and InDesign, that are the main tools that I use for not only the lettering, but I lay out the books to send them ready to print. And on the side, I just kept drawing with my manga influence style. And those contacts also panned out to be able to work on American properties, but I still feel like I give it a little bit of a manga edge, which could be a good thing or a bad thing for some editors. That depends on who you ask.
So, Chris, actually, I want to ask you too that you, as the person who runs Toronto Comic Art Festival, you get a lot of artists who want to display at your show and want to go from being fan to pro. What do you see as being like, you know, I don't know, I mean, I guess what goes into your decision? I mean, what makes you feel like, oh, this person has potential, I want to let them show at the show, and one of you like, ah, no, not yet, little one.
From pretty early on, I have really broad taste in comics, more so than I guess a lot of people do, so I was always reading all kinds of different stuff, and then finding the beguiling, moving from the suburbs where I lived in Toronto, then Brampton, into the Saitama of Toronto. And then moving downtown and finding a real comic shop that really stocked a lot of stuff. You really can't overestimate how important really great local comic book stores are when they really pay attention and they really do their jobs well. It even opened it up way, way more. So in founding the festival with the owner of the Big Island and myself putting it together, I brought all the stuff that I was really interested in. I had friends in webcomics. I had friends who were doing sort of great mainstream stuff, but creator-owned whenever possible, and indie comics and zines. And Peter had all the, like, European guys and all the, like, local art comics-y, you know, Seth wearing his chapeau, you know, kind of creators as well. And we ended up with this really great eclectic mix. And for us, the only consideration from the very first year was, is this person serious about comics? Is this person serious about their vocation? Is comics a hobby for them? Or do they want to make money at it? Do they want this to be their job? And that's our overriding thing today. And we don't give away all the hints when we're looking at it, but I'll give you some because you guys showed up to the panel today. Like, if you submit something to come to TCAP and you want to exhibit, and your page of art is a Tumblr page, and your Tumblr page is one post by you for every 20 reblogs from somebody else, you're not putting your best foot forward as an artist. You're not putting your work out there. You're putting you're curating a really interesting selection of stuff. I like Tumblr for that. But if you're an artist, you've got to put your work out there first, and you've got to show me that you're concerned about putting your stamp on things. When people email us, and they don't have, like, we get people who submit things whose email addresses have, like, go fuck yourself in the email address. like you have to present yourself professionally. And I'm not talking about money, I'm not talking about access. There's free WordPress blogs, you can open a Gmail account literally from the panel right now if you really want to. It's just, how are you presenting yourself in the world? How are you? Do you have a website? Do you have a store on your website that sells your books when you're not at conventions? That's pretty easy. Do you have a Gumroad store if you don't want to be mailing stuff out and you want to just sell digital copies of your work? Little things like that. And that's how we approach people coming to TCAP. It's like, are these people serious about their job? We don't care about the genre of work that they're doing. We care that they care about their work and they're trying to put it forward in a professional way. I have no problem with comics hobbyists. I think it's awesome to be able to, like, do something else and just put out a great comic in your spare time. But if you want to be a comics professional, and we have people like chomping at the bit, we have over 700 applications every year for about 200 spots. We need to look at the people who are most serious about it. And so when we find someone who's really serious and they do work that's manga influenced, or they do work that's only available online, or they have whatever the themes are, it doesn't matter. Like, it just matters that they're serious. And then we start looking at, you know, all the other criteria. That's our number one criteria. So if I had any advice for someone who wanted to get to transition from fan to pro, or pro or pro to, or are we, what's the name?
Fan to pro.
Fan to pro, there we go. It would be just start acting like a professional. Like, just decide one day you get up in the morning, I'm no longer an aspiring creator. I'm a creator. And you just let every other decision you make flow from that statement, and that's going to get you further, like, than anything else. All of everything that I've ever accomplished is due to like pure shonen enthusiasm for the shit that I do, and nothing else. Like, I don't really have anything to fall back on, so I'm glad this is working out.
Lily, one chapter, please.
You were asking if, you know, speaking Japanese is a help, and, you know, my answer is sort of neutral on that. Obviously, all of us up here on this panel are definitely fans and very enthusiastic about things, but kind of, again, following up on what Chris was saying, like, the difference between seeing a resume where you know that somebody's a fan and seeing a resume where you know somebody's like a fanatic is usually pretty obvious. And you want the person who is passionate about what they're doing and is excited to be working specifically at your company or doing whatever you're doing. But you want somebody who's also going to have some perspective on it. So that's kind of where the business side of it comes in. So like,
interpersonal skills are huge.
Yeah. But even just beyond that, of like, I could walk into, I walked into my Tokyopop interview and could name drop, you know, Full Metal Alchemist before it had been licensed here, and like a couple of other things that like showed that I knew the landscape. But I had enough perspective once I sort of got on the licensing side to be like, we're not just going to do titles that Lillian likes, because there's plenty of titles that Lillian likes that are just not going to do well in the American market for whatever reason. And being able to make that judgment, and then, I mean, the flip side is being able to take that risk and try new things as well. But being able to say, you know, just because I like this doesn't mean it's going to be profitable or is going to be the right move for the company is also something that's really important, but kind of balancing that fan to pro transition.
So kind of like not loving manga is not enough. You need to know other things too, yeah?
Mari?
Oh, sorry.
So the other thing too is for those of you out there who want to work for a specific company, you need to research the company. I mean, you need to know that Viz is co-owned by Shueisha and Shogakukan, and the majority, the vast majority of titles that they license are going to be from one of the two companies, and that most other American publishers will not be doing a Shogakukan or Shueisha property because Viz gets first crack. You need to know that obviously Kodansha USA does Kodansha titles. I mean,
we do.
And then there are other companies that you might need to do a little bit more research to find out what titles they handle. And you have to know what you like to do. I do reach some shoujo, but I haven't worked a lot in shoujo. I've worked mostly in shonen. So in this day, I mean, if you want to do it right, you need to be able to do, as a translator, you need to know the voice of the original title and the voice that you can write in. So I had to really switch my brain around when I started doing some shoujo titles, because it is a completely different... I mean, especially going from Naruto to, like, Rose of Versailles. I mean, you can't do an English script of Rose of Versailles in the voice of Naruto. I mean, you could, but, I mean, that would just be wrong.
It would be terrible.
I mean, it could be funny for, like, a total, like, parody, but not... yeah, exactly. So,
Misaki, you want to hop in? Yeah, I kind of wanted to, like, I don't know if you guys noticed, but on this table, there's, like, professionals who are, like, new school and old school, right? And I'm, like, right in the middle where we're having, like...
You're middle
back,
school.
Back in the days when I was coming up, it was shunned upon to be a super fan and being in an industry working as a professional, so I had to disguise myself to not to look like a fan, but I still had that shonen spirit that Christopher was talking about. So it was really hard. I was, like, contemplating on this for a really long time, but then I was really put on the test when I had to face, like, my favorite artist.
Mm. And which was that?
Which was Takehiko Inoue. He's kind of, like, took my interviewer virginity. Yeah, you do. Yes, so we go way back.
He does a Vagabond, yeah. Slam Dunk.
And then, yeah, the real... He's like one of the greatest mangaka of all time, but he was the first person that I ever interviewed in my life, and he taught me everything. But when I first saw him, I couldn't control my voice. Like, I was having that fangirl voice, like, really high, and I was just like, no, I can't do this.
I can't even imagine that, Misaki.
No, I was like this back in the day. It's like, this was like my rookie year, right? I'm trying to, like, stay calm, stay calm, stay calm. Like, I was trying to get through it. But then, I spent about 3 days with him while he was doing a mural. So after 3 days, your tension started to kind of wear off in a kind of a weird direction. So you start to be a little bit more like human-to-human level with these super famous creators. And then that's when I realized, oh, okay, so these guys are people. And that's how we have to treat them.
But they are still gods, though, because... this is the thing, right? This is the thing. To me, I work with Jim Lee. I work with, I work with a lot of different people. The first time meeting them, of course, is like nuts. It's like, you are freaking Jim Lee, okay? But now, we meet each other and we slap each other in the bottom, fix everything. It's like, hey, what's going on? So of course, the interaction level is different. But some of the great stuff that's happened to me is I'm a big Silent Movies fan. So when the first man Azumiya Sensei is actually at San Diego Comic Con.
He does.
And then Silent Movies. So when I first met him, he was at San Diego Comic Con, and then at that time I was still doing action figures and stuff like that. So I walked up, get an autograph, get a Tsukiji from him, and I was like so excited and stuff. Then later on I got to really work with him, and now being like really good friends with him, and we found out that we have the same birthday, birthday date.
Wow.
About a year. Yeah. Pisces. Yes. So it's just really funny because then we never miss saying happy birthday to each other every year. Because it's like my birthday is his birthday. That type of thing is really cool. Still, it doesn't lose myself as a fan. That picture that Deb just showed, it was taken at Kaiga Manga Festival about like 3 years ago. Mm. Yeah. And we were ready to be on stage to talk about, at that time, that Bandai project that we did called Shifty Look. I was sitting there waiting to be on stage, and all of a sudden, my buddy was like, and I just look around, and it's like this little old dude sitting next to me is like, holy shit, this is like Leiji Matsumoto. Oh my God. It's like, crap. And then he really has this like aura going on. To me, it's like, I need to move a little. Yeah, it's too much. But I kind of like when do I really get a chance to sit next to him and
have
a conversation with him or something? So I ended up asking my buddy to introduce me to him, just for the sake of like engaging in conversation and stuff. And
Actually, I want to ask Maria and Mark. Yeah. Some of you have mentioned your moment of, man, I love my job. So Mark, I'd love to hear your if you have one, and Victor, I'd love to hear if you have one.
For me, a time when I said, man, I love my job, I say it all the time, I guess if you're going to ask me the highlight of my job related to manga, because I could say, I love saying hi to my friends and playing ping pong and drinking on Fridays. That's a great part of working at Viz. But specifically related to manga, I think it was the time when I helped out at New York Comic Con 2014, and that's the year that Viz Media brought over Takeshi Obata, the mangaka, the artist of Death Note, Bakuman, All You Need Is Kill, over to New York Comic Con, and I was pretty involved with that. I was the moderator of the panel, so I had a few meals with him. I'm the only one at the table who can speak Japanese. I was able to talk to him through a translator. I'm like, holy shit, I'm the luckiest manga fan in this country, and I get to hear stories that nobody's gonna hear in the panel. Like, he talked about how he got tired of manga and ran away from home on a motorcycle. I'm like, maybe I shouldn't say that's it. That's for everybody in this room. Nobody else, please don't let it go out. But yeah, no, I mean, that was really cool. And to do that panel at the end, tell the room to say thank you to him.
He looked like he was gonna cry.
Oh, did he really? Oh, I couldn't see his face. I didn't look to my so if I looked to my left, I would have seen a crying Obata.
Did your name cry?
That's great. So that was a great experience for me. Once again, there's just so many, there's a lot of satisfaction with my job, but that's one where I think the high was really high. So I guess that's my go-to answer for this type of question.
Very nice. Would you like to jump in?
With me?
That's you.
I guess in my case, mine's a little bit similar. I was
I guess, about almost a year into my job, and I went to Jump Festa for the second time this year, and I got to interview a bunch of mangaka and be around, like, I'm still a fan. I cosplay on, like, the Shonen Jump panel and whatnot. And I was at Jump Festa, and I got to go on to a bunch of interviews with, like, Oda-sensei from One Piece, and Kishimoto-sensei from Naruto, and Matsui-sensei, and Horikoshi-sensei, and even Kagami-sensei for Seraph of the End, which is one of my own series. And I'm like, I would have never in a million years, like, had another chance to do this kind of thing. So, like man, I love my job. But also, like, getting to work on, like, dream projects. Like, today we got to announce Astro Lost in Space, which, like, Shinohara-sensei is my second favorite mangaka of all time. Like, man, I love this job. I get to work on, like, pretty much what would be a dream project or the closest to it. And even with, like, sports manga and Haikyuu, like, man, this is great. So, I don't know. I, like, when I love my job, it's, like, when I'm working on something that I really love. Because I would hate to wake up in the morning and be like, oh, man, I don't want to go to work. But, like, I've never had that. So.
Can I add one more to that one?
Jump in.
So, like, I mentioned that I met, like, a bunch of artists to do the interviews. Like, that's probably, like, half a dozen of them. Or, no, that's double dozen of them. But, like, the moment that I feel like I really love this job is when I come to the convention and meet people and talk about the things that I love. And, like, we click and know exactly what we're talking about with each other. And, like, that's the moment. I feel like I'm so, when I come to these conventions, I'm so high off of this the whole time until, like, convention season over, and then I'm, like, going back to this, like, really depressing Misa mode again.
When it comes to, like, everything about art, like, what I draw, it's when I have the book in my hands because I finished it and I send it to the printer and it comes back. It's like, yes, all this work for this. But for lettering, it's when it's over. Because the edits, sometimes I don't want to, like, when I see that, I get an email saying edits, I'm like, Please let it be short, and please let...
Does that letters think? Sometimes I wonder what my letters think, but I, like, have, like...
Well, here's the thing. Like, sometimes the edits are very easy. It's just like, oh, no, we messed up this word, let's change that. And then sometimes it's like, oh, we just realized that all the files are wrong. It's the wrong size. Like, that happened to me once, and I was like, oh, no.
Here we go. Literally. Does anyone have any questions? Please, hop up. Yeah, unless you think you can be very loud.
First off, I'm really glad I came to this panel because I'm someone who wants to break into the business somehow, but I almost feel like I'm talking to myself because you guys, you're all just normal people.
Happened at a San Diego Comic-Con.
Ooh,
a bunch
okay.
of years ago, I had the extreme honor to work with Hagio Moto-sensei, who is one of the goddesses of shoujo manga. That was the year Fantagraphics released Drunken Dreams. Yeah. And my mentor, Matt, who, unfortunately, I'll never ever get to work on her stuff directly because he's got the monopoly on it, but he was coming, and he had never been to San Diego, and I was like, I've been to San Diego, I can take you guys around, and if you need help interpreting, I can do that too. And so he indulged me, and I remembered that she is a big fan of Ray Bradbury. She had done a manga adaptation of Fahrenheit 451, and I also remembered, because this was actually when he was still with us, that whenever he could, he would come to San Diego Comic Con, and I managed to get the two of them in a room together.
Oh, what the heck?
And
Ray Bradbury fight?
Did they tell you?
No, she turned into a blubbering fangirl. I mean, she's in at least in her 60s. And like she was like, oh my god, I didn't even bring a copy of my book of his book with me. What am I gonna give him? I was like, well, he doesn't read Japanese, so just give him a copy of Drunken Dreams. She said, oh wait, but do you think it's too much if I sign it? And I was like, no, it's okay. But I mean, this is like she's like a goddess in my own mind, and she is like just floored being able to meet Ray Bradbury. And it was not too long after that he passed away too.
Wow.
And that was when I was like, it wasn't even just a man I left my job, but I'm like, oh my god, I can't believe I was able to help make this happen. So, and it happened right here at San Diego. So.
All right, I think we have like a minute or two left. Anyone, any last word? Oh, you have a question? Please.
First, do you just bring a loop around the panel? So I quit cigarettes about a year ago, so this is my smoking alternative.
Yes.
Follow your heart, period.
All the manga artists I've worked with interpreting for them at cons have always said that. Draw everything, draw anything, not just what you like, but draw especially what you don't like till you get better. And then once you can draw, do stories. Because the point with manga, especially in comics, is, I mean, in America, there are separate writers and drawers, but if you can do it all, the more power to you.
I was actually interviewing Tsutomu Nihei tomorrow. I was doing Blame. This is a new book that Vertical just released. It's really good. He did it nice in Sidonia as well. Yeah, well. But what came up was that in my research, he didn't start drawing his comics until his mid-20s. He was like a day laborer, and he just got sick of working with other people. And he's like, I need a job where I'll be alone all the time. And he became a mangaka. And he became a mangaka because in Japan, as opposed to here, there's just the road to becoming a mangaka. You like volunteer to be an assistant, you like get paid crappy wages, but you work your way up and you learn how things work. And then like 3 years later he had his debut with Blame. And that's the kind of thing, well, sort of with Blame, but that's the kind of thing that exists in Japan that doesn't exist here. So for you, it really does mean like draw all the time, take every opportunity available to you, and just present yourself as professional as you can, try not to get in fights on the internet.
Well, we're kind of out of time, actually.
I can tell you after, like, if you're studying abroad in Japan in college, when you get to college, a lot of those companies actually, some of them do accept assistants, even if you're a foreign student in Japan. So
people may not hire you until you've graduated college, and that doesn't mean art college. You can go to any college, but that's just sort of we want to make sure we're hiring somebody who's a grown-up and who knows how to keep deadlines and be responsible, not because we don't think that somebody's art is good enough yet.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
But
yeah,
the only way you
can
find a job while you're in college.
I need my little bell. I'm really sorry, but we are out of time. There are more opportunities for you to, there are other wonderful panels that are this weekend, including one later tonight, which is
Boston Translation, and you'll see Lillian and me and a bunch of other people there.
And also some signings, we have a manga Publishing Pros Roundtable tomorrow night, where you can get to talk, you can get to hear what the people who run the show think. And we also have our Best Worst Manga panel on Saturday from 7 to 8, where we have 1 minute speed rounds to recommend you our favorite manga and the manga we hate the most.
It's awesome.
So thank you so much.